Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Money Smarts for You. Enhance your lifestyle by taking the positive path towards managing your money.
Welcome. I'm Barbie O'Connor, your host for the Money Smarts for You show. After years of working with clients, helping them save, preserve, and grow their assets, I wrote the book Money Smarts for You, The Basics. I wanted teens, millennials, growing families, and others to have a chance to learn the essentials that everyone needs to know about money in their adult lives. This show is your chance to ask me about the financial topics that affect your everyday life. If you have questions or thoughts about what you'd like to hear about on future shows, feel free to email me at barbie@moneysmartsforyou.com. Our theme in April is understanding investments. This week, I'm covering the five basic things you need to know about investment. Over the remaining weeks of this month, I'll go into detail about investment strategies, disciplines, and concepts. I hope you will join me each Wednesday in April for the Money Smarts for You shows. If you followed my recommendations found in my book, Money Smarts for You, The Basics, which is available on Amazon, by now you have a spending plan that you can afford. You've saved your initial nest egg of $1,000. And you've started to accumulate cash equal to 6 to 9 months of expenses for your emergency fund. Your nest egg and your emergency fund should be invested in government-insured short-term savings accounts or money market funds. You may ask, why should you leave the money there? And one of the reasons is because when you have an emergency, say you lose your job suddenly, or for some reason you have other emergency expenses, it doesn't always happen at the best time for the stock or bond market. So having your money in an account that you can easily access, that you can get to quickly, or you don't lose any principal when you withdraw, is really probably the best place for it to be for each and every one of you. By now, you may be participating in an employee stock purchase plan as well as a retirement plan like a 401k or 403b, something like that. But you may find all these investment terms new and confusing. Hopefully today I can help you better understand what you're doing with your money and help you make better decisions about your future choices of how to invest your money. I know I'm talking a little bit about retirement funds right now, but I really feel that once you've got your nest egg and your emergency fund and you are fully committed to your retirement plan, if you have discretionary dollars left over, in other words, money left over from your everyday expenses that you've allowed for in your expense plan, then you can start talking about creating an investment account that's separate and apart from all of these nest egg, emergency fund, and your retirement plans. So some of what I'm going to talk about today applies to that, and if you have any questions, please email me or give me a call. When I was a little girl, my parents and I played a Milton Bradley stock market game. Much like the game of Monopoly, this game simulated the movement of stock prices by rolling a pair of dice to determine prices of the stocks, both going up and going down. It was one of my favorite games. During the process of playing the game, I learned about the market, portfolio diversification, and the emotions associated with market movement. Don't discount the emotions. One of the things we'll talk about later on in the month is how to set up disciplines that allow you to act appropriately and not give in to fear or counsel your fears. Why do we have stock markets? In a capitalist system such as we have in the United States, companies that want to expand have to have money or capital to do so. Yes, the company owners can go to the bank or to venture capitalists, their best friends, family members, and angel investors, but at some point in their growth process, they will go to the stock market. When a company goes from being privately held, usually having less than 35 investors or 35 shareholders, to wanting to be a publicly held company, the company will have to have an initial public offering known as an IPO. Money from the IPO may be used by the company for expansion, or it may be used to buy out existing shareholders in whole or in part. There is a document called the prospectus, which will tell you what the IPO funds will be used for. When you watch the movie The Social Network, pay special attention to the parts of the movie regarding the founding shareholders or the shareholders that allege that they were the founding shareholders. There's some great learning opportunities there. Once a company has issued stock through an IPO, then the stock is traded in the stock market or the secondary market, like the NASDAQ, the NYSE, the DAX, the FTSE, and other markets all around the world. NASDAQ stands for National Association of Securities Dealers, and NYSE stands for New York Stock Exchange. The DAX is the German market, and the FTSE is another European market. When you see stock quotes, they represent the price that one person sold shares for while another bought them, the price at which they traded hands. Shares of stock are registered electronically, although in small privately held companies, shares are issued in certificate or paper form. If there are more buyers than sellers for shares in a company then the price usually goes up. If there are more sellers than buyers, then the price usually goes down. Let me go over that again. If more people want to buy a company or company shares, that means there's more demand, and that will make the price of the stock go up. The same thing happens on the way down. If there are more people that want to get rid of a stock, that want to sell a stock, then the price will go down. Common stock usually carries voting rights with it, in addition to ownership in the company that's issuing the shares. There are other kinds of stock, but I'm not discussing those today. I'll discuss those later on in the month. In addition, if the company makes sufficient money and the board of directors, who are elected by the shareholders who have voting rights, decide to share the profits, they can declare a dividend and pay the shareholders a portion of the money made by the company. Dividends can go up and down depending on the financial fortunes of the company. During the 2008 financial meltdown, one company, which had a reputation for paying a consistent dividend year after year after year, which was General Electric, they found themselves in a financial bind due to problems with the financing arm of their company. So they had to cut the dividend. Doing so disappointed shareholders and caused many to sell their shares, causing the stock price to drop dramatically. So with an investment in common stock, you can make money by receiving a dividend, and you can make money if the stock price goes up, and you sell the stock for more than you paid for it, therefore making a profit. If you sell the stock for less, you will be losing money and taking a loss. Fixed income investments do what their name says they do. They provide a fixed income. Fixed income investments include U.S. Treasury securities, certificates of deposit, also known as CDs, as well as notes and bonds issued by corporations, municipalities, and other government entities. These securities are issued with the promise to pay a certain amount of money every year, usually payable every 6 months or every quarter, depending on the issuer. When you buy a fixed income security, you are a creditor of the company that issues it. You are loaning them money. In addition, they promise to pay you back a principal amount equal to the face amount of the note or bond. If you invest $10,000 in a fixed income note of a good quality company or municipality with a face value of $10,000 that matures in 5 years and promises to pay you 3% per year, then you will expect to have the $10,000 returned to you 5 years from now, and in the meantime receive $300 in income per year, with payments in increments of $150, most likely paid every 6 months until the note matures in 5 years. During the life of that investment, the market value of the note can fluctuate based on the demand for notes of that maturity paying that interest rate. Fixed income prices work like a teeter-totter. When you have a fixed interest rate of 3% and interest rates in the market go up, the price of your existing 3% note goes down. On the other hand, if interest rates in the marketplace go down, the price of your 3% note goes up. Think of a teeter-totter or a seesaw with bond prices on one side and interest rates on the other. That is why right now, with the Federal Reserve threatening to raise interest rates, you are seeing banks and other entities move their bond portfolios into floating rate notes that the interest rate moves up and down with the market, which allows the principal value to stay the same. And what they're doing is they're doing that rather than adding more fixed income notes while interest rates are lower. They don't want to see their portfolio values drop if interest rates go up. So in other words, right now, a lot of banks, instead of choosing to buy a fixed rate note, are choosing to buy floating rate notes so that the interest rate will go up if interest rates go up, which allows them to feel confident that their principal value will stay fairly even. It won't go up and down in value. Okay, so hopefully now you have some idea of what common stock is and what fixed income securities are. We can move into discussing what mutual funds and exchange-traded funds are and then go into what investment objectives are and explain the terms used to describe them. Let's talk about mutual funds, which are managed portfolios of investments. When I worked at Merrill Lynch, there was a very nice man who had worked in the business advising clients for over 30 years. He was a great mentor to me and taught me a lot about the market and how to explain things to clients. When I was the office mutual funds coordinator, he asked me if that was mutual fund or mutual fund. If your mutual funds go up in value, then that will be mutual fund for you. A little levity really helped when the market was a bit dreary. A mutual fund can be made up of common stocks, fixed income investments, or a combination. Funds can be made up of very specific types of companies, such as energy companies, emerging market companies, developing nation companies, European companies, Chinese companies, international companies. All kinds of varieties of funds exist in the investing universe today. Funds can be designed to meet specific investment objectives like income, growth, total return, preservation of capital, and tax considerations as well. There are thousands and thousands of mutual funds. Most companies that manage mutual funds offer a family of funds for investors to choose from, especially those that serve as custodians for retirement plans for many corporations. Most likely, when you signed up for your 401k plan or 403b plan, you were presented with an array of choices of mutual funds to invest in, as well as a money market fund, and maybe the company stock too. Remember, mutual funds are actively managed, meaning there is someone to whom you are paying a small percentage, and that someone is buying and selling the securities held within that fund with the intent to make the most money possible within the limits allowed by the type of securities that can be held within that fund. They're also usually trying to beat a benchmark rate of return, like the S&P 500 or the Russell 1000 Growth or the Russell 2000 Value. A benchmark is usually a representative basket of securities that are similar to those in the mutual fund that represents the market return without the benefit of professional management. And the reason they want to beat the benchmark is because you're going to be paying them to manage their money, and you want to pay them to get a better rate of return than you could get if you just invested in this basket of securities. When you buy a mutual fund, you usually buy it at net asset value plus a commission that is either charged to you when you buy it, called a front-end load, or you pay a commission when you sell it, called a back-end load, or 12b1 fee. And that back-end load may diminish the longer you own the fund, or you may only pay a management fee charged to you regularly by the manager. Depends on how the fund is structured. The website of the fund, as well as the prospectus, will tell you about the fees charged to you by the manager. One thing you need to know about managed mutual funds is that when you put in an order to sell your shares, you aren't going to know the price that you're selling your shares until the next day. And the reason for that is, as the orders come in to the fund manager indicating that people want to sell, they have to decide what they're going to sell that's in the portfolio. And they won't basically know what the portfolio value is until the end of the day when the market closes. And that is when the net asset value is determined. So that's one thing about mutual funds is you don't always know what price you are actually selling your shares for until the next day. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs as they're referred to, are traded on major exchanges and are unmanaged groups of securities. For example, you can buy an ETF that is made up of the S&P 500, which is 500 stocks followed by the research and rating agency of Standard & Poor's, and they are considered a representation of the overall broad stock market in the United States. In other words, you can buy the benchmark if you wish. There are all kinds of ETFs as well, international ones, energy-only ones, income-oriented ones, European ones, all kinds of portfolios of stocks bundled together to give you the opportunity to buy them and invest in them. When you buy and sell an ETF, you pay a commission to buy and one to sell, and that's usually determined by the brokerage firm or financial institution that you are using to do that transaction. In addition, there is usually a small percentage charged to the manager who selected the securities that are part of the ETF. Again, you can find the fee information on the website of the ETF or on the website of the investment firm with which you invest. The investment objectives that you decide are right for you are the ones that will guide you in selecting the investments for your money. Investment objectives are usually described as income, growth, total return, or balanced, preservation of capital, and tax advantaged as well. If you describe income as your investment objective, then you are looking for cash flow from your investment. You want income from dividends or from interest paid by notes or bonds. Income might be your objective when you retire or are no longer earning a regular paycheck, or it might be your objective if you want to have a little extra spending money. If you describe growth as your investment objective, then you're looking for the value of your investments to go up in price. You want to be able to sell your investments for more than you paid for them, and you are not as concerned about cash flow or an income stream from your investments as you are long-term capital appreciation. Usually, if you select growth as your investment objective, you will be investing in common stocks of companies that have a bright future and the potential for their stock to increase in value. If you choose total return or balanced as your investment objective, then it means that you want your investment to increase in value and you want cash flow or an income stream from the money you invest. Usually, you will invest in a fund or portfolio that has both common stocks and notes or bonds as part of the portfolio. You will probably have dividends and interest paid into your portfolio, as well as common stocks that have the potential to appreciate. If you choose preservation of capital or safety of principal as your investment objective, you will most likely be invested in fixed income securities like U.S. Treasuries, high-quality corporate or municipal notes, or bonds that have defined maturity dates and pay either fixed or floating rates of interest. Tax-advantaged investing, if that is your investment objective, will find you invested in tax-free municipal bonds or tax-deferred investments like your retirement accounts, such as an IRA or 401k or 403b. Tax-free municipal bonds are issued by cities and states and pay tax-free interest to the bondholders or investors. Not all municipal bonds are tax-free, so make sure that if someone is suggesting municipal bonds to you, that the ones they are suggesting to you are tax-free if you have determined that you get a benefit from the tax-free income provided by those kinds of bonds. Usually the interest rate is much lower than for taxable notes and bonds, so check with your tax advisor, your accountant, to make sure you're in a high enough tax bracket to benefit from the tax-free status of the income paid by these types of bonds. Tax-deferred investments in your retirement accounts allow you to invest in compound growth without paying taxes until you withdraw your retirement savings. So basically, when you have an IRA or 401k or 403b, and you invest in, say, a growth fund or an income fund, because the retirement account is a tax-deferred account, meaning you don't pay tax on the growth or the income that's paid until you make your ultimate withdrawal, which you usually have to do after you're 59 and a half. So just keep in mind that while that money is in those retirement accounts, it's compounding and growing without the tax bite. That's one of the reasons why, as I mentioned before, you want to max out your contribution to those accounts. If your employer does a matching program, you want to be able to take advantage of that match, which allows you to put even more money in your retirement account. The major benefit of tax-deferred investments is that the money can grow and compound without the tax bite. Investments in Roth IRAs allow tax-free growth, and the withdrawals are tax-free after the age of 59 and a half. Regular IRAs, 401ks, and 403bs, when you take those withdrawals after the age of 59 and a half, then you will have to pay tax on the withdrawals that you take out of those accounts. I hope I was able to help you better understand the basics of investment. Since stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and ETFs are all intangible investments, it can be tricky to understand something that you can't see or touch. But think about it this way. If you own common stock in McDonald's, Whole Foods, Johnson & Johnson, and many others, you are part of the fabric of American life. you own a little bit of each of these different companies. If you own bonds or notes issued by those companies, then you are one of their creditors, lending them money so those companies can conduct their business and expand their business. As we progress through the month of April, I hope you can start to feel a sense of excitement, pride of ownership, and involvement in our capitalist system, and an interest in your investments that goes beyond the money involved and gives meaning to your financial life. Thank you for joining me today for the Money Smarts for You show. Please email your questions or thoughts to Barbie at moneysmartsforyou.com. That's B-A-R-B-I-E at moneysmartsforyou, that's M-O-N-E-Y-S-M-A-R-T-S, the number four, the letter U.com. And we will cover them in future shows. Remember, take care of your money to take care of yourself.
Thank you for joining us today. Find out more at moneysmartsforyou.com. Like us on Facebook, buy the book on Amazon, and remember to subscribe to the show.